Hey guys, welcome to the Falcoholics post-game podcast for the 2019 season, week 5, the Atlanta Falcons visiting the Houston Texans. Joining me as always is my co-host and fellow writer at the Falcoholic, Evan Birchfield. Evan, how about that game?
Oh, it was a very good watch, DW. I have no idea what you're talking about.
It definitely was if you're a Texans fan, because yeah, the Falcons lost this game on the road 53-32. I do want to add the caveat that the last score was a pick six against Matt Ryan. So technically the defense really only gave up 47 points, if that makes you feel any better at all. It probably shouldn't. It doesn't make me feel better. Evan, what's your quick takeaway about this game? Your immediate thoughts in the aftermath?
Our defense is bad. That is my initial thought, because 32 points is a winnable score for an offense, you know? But 53 points, and you did mention how one of them was an interception return that, like, it looked like it was just given, the team gave up at that point. They weren't going to chase him down. 32 points should be enough to win you a game, but, like, if you're going to lose, it's usually close. But it felt like we got blown out, and we basically did.
Yeah. Yep. Some last minute, you know, last 6-8 minute drives by the Falcons put them over 30, got them to 32. Beautiful pass from Ryan to Ridley for that touchdown that put them over 30 for the first time this season. Oh my God, this offense this season has been a disaster in itself. But let's start with the defense, because I think the story here going into this game, I had done in my normal series comparing the Falcons defense to the opposing offense, I had noted that this was a prime opportunity for the Falcons defense to go against a Texans offensive line that had given up the second most quarterback hits in the league through the first four games. Deshaun Watson has been hit repeatedly, sacked, I believe, 18 times in four games. And yeah, they did not register a single sack. Grady Jarrett seemed to be the only person generating any kind of pressure. In fact, they had some opportunities, but they just could not capitalize. And it seemed like on those opportunities, the Texans converted those for big plays. So what do you think about the fact that this Falcons defensive line could not take advantage of arguably a pretty weak offensive line in the Houston Texans?
Yeah, I mean, and then I mentioned it to you before the show that when they did get pressure, Watson's ability to just get out of the pocket and either extend the play or throw it downfield made it irrelevant. The times I could think about is like that he was in the pocket and the pocket collapsed, and he basically, like, I'm not sure who hit it, but he Watson basically fumbled the ball, was able to pick it up and then run for, I think, a first down. Like, to me, you can't totally put that on the defense. Like, he's a great player. You got to give him his credit. But there were many times where it's just you see Tack coming around, chasing him to the other side, and there's like, you know, Tack's not going to outrun Watson, so there's nothing he can do there. But yeah, they're definitely, you know, you got to have some sacks. I do agree that it looked like Grady Jarrett was like the only real interior pass rusher on the team, because he was getting in the backfield making plays and, like, you know, stopping Carlos Hyde a couple times. But the defensive line, you know, they struggled. But, in you know, it's hard to pick apart the defense without looking at them as a whole, because, like, everybody struggled, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a very fair take on that, because, the you know, a lot of fans are going to hone in on specific players. I know I saw, you know, several people criticizing Isaiah Oliver, and certainly he had some bad plays. Ricardo Allen, I saw getting some heat. Desmond Trufant. And it sort of went across the board, Kamal Ishmael. And I think when you begin to pile up names like that, it begins to point at something more than just, hey, these players didn't play well, because it really was, it has to be something deeper. When the entire defensive secondary is out of position, you know, missing plays, not communicating, that's, you know, something that Dan Quinn emphasized a lot in this offseason. He had said repeatedly that they were putting special emphasis on getting the guys in the secondary and, in the middle of the defense to communicate with one another, to know where the other guy was going to be, to make sure people were where they needed to be. And if there's one thing we've seen through these first five games, it's that this defense constantly looks out of place. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for Dan Quinn to have spent this much time focusing on communication, whatever he did, not only didn't work, it may have had the opposite effect, because the secondary just looks lost. And it'd be one thing if it was consistently Isaiah Oliver and you could say first time starter, second year player, he's struggling, he's bad, whatever. But when you see multiple guys, again, you know, Ricardo Allen, Desmond Trufant, Keanu Neal before he went down with injury, Kamal Ishmael, you know, you've got veterans back there who are also out of position. That tells me there's something else going on. So with that, I mean, you've now seen five games with Dan Quinn as the defensive coordinator. In your mind, is this defense better, the same, or worse than the injury-riddled unit we saw last year?
It's definitely worse, because at least they had an excuse to be bad. And I still don't even think they were that bad. And, you know, I'm a big homer for Jack Crawford, but I notice he's rarely on the field anymore. I don't know why exactly. I notice Deidre Sanaa is always inactive. Like, the defensive line is struggling as it is. Why not try something different? It just seems like we're stuck in our ways and nothing's being adjusted. And, you know, you see it kind of on both sides of the ball at times, but on defense, it's like you pretty much see the same thing every week. And it's like these quarterbacks, it's like they're, you know, the ones we've been facing lately have been a little more mobile. Like, we were able to somewhat contain Carson Wentz enough to win, because we did almost lose that game too. If it wasn't for like our offense there at the end. But you know, with Jacoby Brissett and Marcus Mariota and now Deshaun Watson, I mean, Watson had a I believe he had a perfect passer rating, which you don't always see. Especially when they throw, it's one thing if I walked in real quick, threw a pass, perfect passer rating. He threw it 33 times, folks.
Yep.
426 yards, 5 touchdowns.
Oh,
a perfect
my God.
Passer rating. Like, it, and it sucks because Dan Quinn's big thing was he was taking back over the reins, and everyone was excited. But that's a risk because of what has happened. Now he is solely to blame for the defense being garbage. And I noticed a lot of people mentioning on Twitter, like, this is where we're at, where people are asking for our Marquand Emmanuel to come back. Like, we're in that spot. Like, I knew going into the season, like, the Falcons couldn't be dominant. Like, I had some optimism. Then week one hits and you kind of get a little, okay, well, maybe we're not as good. I don't think anybody could have seen us being this bad. Like, we're in a hole right now.
Yeah, this is a whole other level. I think if you were to ask me which unit may struggle more in 2019 before the season, I probably would have argued the offense because of a new coordinator again coming in. Even though I was hoping, and we'll talk about the offense in the second half, even though I was hoping, you know, the offense under Carter wouldn't change dramatically. But I felt like with Quinn in there running the defense, he would know exactly what he wanted to do. He had a good pedigree coming out of Seattle, blah, blah, blah. We've talked about all this stuff before. But, you know, to your point, and I agree with you, I think the defense actually looks worse this year with all of these guys healthy, which is stunning. And they gave up almost 27 points per game last year. I think now after this game, we are actually giving up more points per game than the injury-riddled defense of 2018. Pardon me. And if you're Dan Quinn, like you said, you know, you made that bet on yourself that I'm going to be the guy to turn this defense around. I'm going to step in. It's going to be mine, and I'm going to take the credit for it. Well, you are going to get to take the credit for it. And this putrid defense that just gave up 47 on the road. Again, we won't count those last six on the pick six. gave up 47 on the road, as you mentioned, a perfect passer rating. And I love Deshaun Watson. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks. And I don't want to discredit him at all. As you said, he deserves credit for, you know, being a very good player and extending plays outside the pocket. But this is unacceptable no matter what. You cannot, as a defensive coordinator, give up 47 points and expect to keep your job. And even more so that you know, you've done this now and you're also the head coach. Does this spell doom for Dan Quinn in Atlanta in your mind, Evan?
It's got to. I was, you know, everybody was pretty much on the fence, not even on the fence. I'd say they were pretty much over the fence, about to touch the ground, that Dan Quinn needed to be fired. This is like, you know, I was hoping something would turn around for his sake, because I do like him. I think he's a good coach and stuff, but I don't know how you can recover from it. Like, this is, it's not like you lost 32-37 like that. I mean, that sucks, but like, that's manageable. This team got destroyed. Like, the record, or the score seems a lot closer than it actually felt. It's weird. Like, I feel like we lost 53-0. That's the kind of feeling this game had. Because like, the Ridley touchdown came really late. It was more like garbage time scoring. It's just, it's crushing, because it's like, we're not even halfway yet and the season's right, basically done. I wanted to mention this. I saw online, Jason Butt with The Athletic said that Kiki Cootie, who's a wide receiver for the Texans, mentioned that the Falcons defense felt basic. That kind of sums it up. And it's what we've been seeing all year. You know, it's not like anything's really changed. It goes back to what I mentioned a couple minutes ago about there's like no adjustment on defense. It seems very vanilla. And when we, you know, for folks who didn't actually watch the game, the Falcons were in it for a couple, like they were only like a touchdown down at times. They went for two and got it. I think Austin Hooper caught it. We were like in this game, and then the Texans took off towards the end because our defense could not stop them. I don't even think we mentioned it, but Will Fuller completely had a like Julio-esque day.
A record game.
Yeah, 16 targets, 14 receptions, 217 yards, and three touchdowns. And he should have had five touchdowns, one of which he was just short. And then the other one, Isaiah Oliver basically tackled him out at the inch line. So he almost scored like five times. And then, you know, they had a tight end come in and score two of the touchdowns. And I think that was like his only two catches of the day. It was just, you know, it's like we focus on DeAndre Hopkins, but Will Fuller torched us, just absolutely torched us. And, you know, and their running backs had like a solid day against us too. We weren't stopping the run at all. It's one of those days where you want to just like wash your mouth. It just feels filthy. I don't know how else to put it. I feel dirty right now. Like, I need to go shower. It was gross watching that.
It really was. You know, again, what's amazing is if you look at the Texans, like their running game, Carlos Hyde, 21 carries, 60 yards. He had a touchdown, but, you know, 2.9 yard average. Duke Johnson, you know, 9 carries, 59 yards, 6.6 average, but most of that came on the big run towards the end of the game. Realistically, this is a defense that can stop the run now. It's like they focused on that heavily this offseason with signing guys like Alan Bailey and Tyler Davidson. And I think those were good signings, but they're stopping the run. But to your point, they gave up 426 passing yards, three touchdowns to the number two wide receiver, not even the, you know, Nuke Hopkins, who is one of the, you know, best receivers in the league. It seems like this defense, they aimed to fix one issue and they created a bigger, more glaring issue in the process. Mm-hmm. Sure, you're doing better against the run, but now you're giving up record yards to the opposing quarterback and even to, you know, lesser quarterbacks like Mariota and Brissett, you know, neither of which I think are in the same league as Deshaun Watson. Those guys had essentially good games, you know, compared to their normal stat line. So this is quickly becoming a laughable defense. And again, as you pointed out perfectly at the beginning of this conversation, for Dan Quinn to take ownership of this defense, this means ultimately it's on his shoulders. This is him. This is on him. There's no other way to cut that. And this feels like the game that may end up being the death knell for his time as head coach in Atlanta. I hate it. I liked Dan Quinn. I liked the hire when we brought him in. I did personally feel like he deserved this season, despite some of the issues we saw last year. But my God, 1-4 arguably could have been 0-5 were it not for a dropped pass by Nelson Aguilar against the Eagles. This is quite possibly the worst possible start we've seen to a season in recent memory, and this includes the Mike Smith years. So very, very damning, horrible game. Definitely not one you want to see at this point in the season. So I think at this point, I think Dan Quinn will make it to the bye week. All bets are off after that, especially if they continue in this fashion.
Definitely.
Yeah. So with that, before we talk about the offense, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back on the Falcoholics postgame podcast for week 5, the Atlanta Falcons visiting the Houston Texans, where they suffered a 53-32 loss. This is David Walker. I'm back with my co-host, Evan Birchfield. And we're going to talk about the Falcons offense because I actually think that this is a mixed bag, despite the fact that they gave up 32 points against Houston. So let's talk about some of the numbers real quick before we dive into this, because I think, you know, this is part of the story, and I want to talk about the other half of the story. Matt Ryan finished the game 32-46, 330 yards passing, 3 touchdowns, and of course that 1 interception, which, you know, I know some people are going to beat up on for it. You know, mm-hmm. The pick 6 at the end of the game, it was completely irrelevant at that point. Worthless pick. I mean, it hurts his stats, but it didn't mean anything in the context of this game. The running game, Devontae Freeman, 11 carries, 30 yards for a 2.7 average. Ito Smith, 5 carries, 19 yards for a 3.8 average. Receiving, Calvin Ridley led all receivers with 5 receptions for 88 yards and a touchdown. Austin Hooper had 6 for 56. Ito Smith had 6 for 45. Julio Jones, 3 for 42. And Mohamed Sanu, 5 for 42 with a touchdown. This is, I think, where some of the flaws are showing. Yes, they scored 32 points. Yes, Matt Ryan had over 300 yards. Yes, you should be able to score 30-plus points in the game and win that game in the NFL. And clearly, the defense has major issues. But Evan, I'm curious to get your opinion on this. I definitely have a strong one here. I still feel like this offense is having major issues, even though they scored 32 points today. And this was the first game they scored 30 points all season, went over 30 points. This still feels like an offense that is not working to its biggest, to its fullest capabilities. What's your take on that? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you feel like this was a turning point for the offense?
No, it's just you look at how the offense really didn't turn it on until late. It felt like, like I mentioned earlier, the Calvin Ridley touchdown was like a junk time touchdown. Brilliant, like beautiful play too. He like sidelined it and then, you know, he almost stepped out of bounds and then he caught it in the end zone. It was just magnificent. But it just shows you, you know, I mean, Ridley had one target and it was a catch in the Colts game. This dude should be a top focus of your offense, just like Julio Jones should. We have no run game. Ito Smith has, I've been saying it, I feel like, all season. He's looked better than Freeman. And, you know, I want Devontae Freeman to be the better back because I like him. But, you know, you can't, like, ignore what your eyes are seeing. And then both of them being used a lot in the passing game this game, both of them had a combined, I think, 11 targets. That's a bit much for a running back when you consider the Texans combined running back targets, and they scored 53 points. What they only had 2. You'd like to see Julio Jones more involved. He did have 7 targets and only 3 of them were caught, but it seemed like when those balls were dropped, he was like at least had 2 or 3 defenders on him, which only makes me think that somebody else has to be open. I do like seeing Hooper constantly used because I do appreciate having a tight end like heavily involved in a passing game.
Agreed.
But the way it's being used, like you look at the stats and they don't look terrible. But definitely, as you mentioned, something does feel off. You have to have a reliable running game. That's first off. Even the Patriots never have that marquee running back, but they still collectively have like a good day running the ball when they need to. We do not. It's like combined our running backs had like 49 yards, so less than 50. I don't remember the last time a Falcons running back had a 100-yard day. You have to be able to grind the clock out. And it feels like, to me anyways, it's like the Falcons offense just feels predictable where first down, you almost know it's going to be a run and up the middle to Freeman, which goes for like a yard or two. And then they'll throw something off short to Sanu or something. And maybe he'll take a shot at Julio on a third down and the Falcons get off the field. And that's how you prolong games and you allow the other team to score a lot more points because you're not having real drives. You're just kind of doing the same vanilla thing. Like, I mean, we're hearing the defense being vanilla, but the offense seems very predictable to me. I don't know if it's just because I'm a fan and I watch them every weekend. Like, even when they suck, I'm going to watch them. But they seem very predictable. Do you get that feeling when you're watching them, especially during the beginning of the game?
Oh, absolutely. And I think you absolutely hit on a key point here is the predictability. I think when, even under Steve Sarkisian last year and then 2017 to a lesser extent, but clearly in 2016 under Kyle Shanahan, one of the hallmarks of this offense was its unpredictability. First down, they may pass it for 20 yards. Second in 15, all of a sudden you have a run up the middle that goes for 10 yards. Third and 3, 20 yard pass to Julio. I mean, you would see just they became so unpredictable that defenses had no idea what kind of play call was coming next. And it feels like the opposite is true now. I saw on several occasions where Houston stacked the box on first down and Devontae literally has to run into a crowd of 10 guys on defense. And at one point, the Falcons actually lined up in a 14 formation, which is absolutely stunning. For those that don't know, a 14 formation indicates one running back, 4 tight ends. They brought in an extra lineman to be a tight end, and I think the run only got 1 yard, which is, I mean, when you basically stack the box and say, we're definitely running it, and you can only pick up 1 yard, as an offensive coordinator, you have probably proven that you don't know what you're doing. But and that's the thing. There's the thing that I'm afraid of is people say, oh, 32 points. Yeah, the offense is back on track. And I don't think that's the case because, as you pointed out, Calvin Ridley had, 5 catches, 88 yards and 1 touchdown. But why has it been this long before you got him involved? And why does it come at the expense of Julio Jones, who ends up with 42 yards? And you've got, Ito Smith with more receiving yards than Julio, and you've got, Mohamed Sanu, with 42 yards, same number as Julio, and Devontae Freeman with 40 yards receiving. That tells me that something is sideways. Something is sideways with your offense. And I think they scored 32 points. And I was chatting with Gina and some of the other writers, in our chat during the game, and she said it perfectly. She said they are scoring in spite of the offensive coordinator, not because of him. It feels like the talent on the field, having a Matt Ryan, having Julio Jones, having a Calvin Ridley and Austin Hooper on the field, they are causing points to go on the board despite the poor scheming. And I think we saw that where Ryan is scrambling and the touchdown pass to Ridley was him having to scramble outside the pocket to make something happen. So this is something that is concerning for me. I think Cutter is someone that when we brought him in, I was hopeful he would continue to run a creative offense, you know, just basically take what was there and continue to run it. Instead, I think we have seen him go back to what he did before, and it's just not working. And it's working even less well than it did back in 2012 through 2014 when he was first here. I am very personally disappointed in this offense. I think they're capable of averaging 30-plus points per game with this talent. And it's just not happening. So I don't know what to say about it other than that.
I want to mention one thing real quick. And it may not make total sense, but it goes back to what you were saying about them scoring 32 points, but it's not really feeling like, you know, like the offense is gelling. I think it's often overlooked that when you're losing by, okay, for example, at one point in the game, we were losing 17-33. It's easier to score later in the game while you're getting your ass kicked, I think. Does that make sense? Like, that doesn't always show up as at least in my mind, it's not like a competitive score. It's like the defense let off the gas a little, or they're, you know, playing more contain so that we can sneak one by them sort of thing, where I don't feel like it's like we scored 32 like competitively. It was more, you know, like late in the game, we're losing. We got us a junk yard or a junk time touchdown. Now it's time for the Texans to get the ball and score on us. That probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but I find it easier that teams are going to score while they're down a shit ton of points, basically.
Yeah, and I think it's no coincidence as well that, you know, when you're down several scores, you're going into a pass-heavy offense usually. You're not going to run the ball a lot. And a lot of times you're going to run more no huddle. You're going to, you know, get up to the line quickly. And, you know, that has always been something that favors Matt Ryan and the way he plays. So I think at this point, you're right. Now, today they did score 17 in the first half, so we'll give them some credit for that, which meant, you know, 15 in the second half. Mm-hmm. Those 15 were all in the fourth quarter. You know, they basically were shut down in the third quarter, you know, to your point. And they were, you know, sort of tacking on those extra points as it went along to try to close out, you know, the game and close the gap. So, yeah, they were passing heavy. And that's the concern, is that when this offense has worked, it's been when they have been playing from behind and they're playing catch up, which means Matt Ryan is slinging it. They're not trying to force, you know, the ball in the running game. And they're probably playing a lot of no huddle or hurry up at minimum. And, you know, if you're an offensive coordinator and the only time you can score is when that's the case, that's a problem. Like, I don't know how your Dirk Cutter say, hey, I'm good with us, you know, scoring only when we're behind by two or three scores. That's just, you know, it's ludicrous. So in my mind, where this coaching staff is now, Dan Quinn, defense coordinator, doing a horrible job. Clearly, Dirk Cutter, offensive coordinator, I think he is also doing a horrible job, and I don't think
Dan Quinn hired him.
Yeah,
that goes back to the head coach, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely, and arguably, you know, here's the other thing: Dan Quinn hired him, but you have to ask. You know, Quinn had never coached with him before.
Definitely, yeah, that's a good point.
So, and I think you have to look at Thomas Dimitroff, who saw what Dirk Cutter had done here between 2012 and 2014. And if you thought that this was, you know, what he was capable of, why would you sign on with Quinn to bring this guy back in? Clearly, you had 3 years watching this guy run the offense that you assembled as a GM. And other than 2012, which I would argue was an offense that still underperformed, in 2013 and 2014, an offense that basically fell apart after injuries. A lot of this also falls on the GM. And I don't think Dimitroff is free of blame here, because he had to sign off on this guy coming back to be offensive coordinator. So, you know, I'm not saying necessarily that Steve Sarkisian was the answer. You know, he had his own issues, but I will say this for Sarkisian. He scored 30 plus points multiple times last year. Now he struggled against good defenses, but he had several games where he had that offense scoring in bunches. And this is the first time in five games we've seen the Falcons go over 30 points. They had just 10 points last week. So I think if you were to ask me right now, who would you take between Dirk Koetter and 2018 Steve Sarkisian? Right now, for me, the answer is Sarkisian. And I think that's bad news if you're the offensive coordinator for the Falcons. So any last thoughts, Evan, before we wrap up this podcast for the day?
Folks, if you're sticking with the team, you know, we'll still be here to talk to you every weekend, and hopefully there'll be more W's ahead. But, you know, if you take a break from watching Falcons football, I can't blame you. But unfortunately, for me and DW, it's win or lose. So we, you know, we appreciate you listening and stuff. But, you know, I really want, you know, I don't want Dan Quinn fired. I just want to win. And, yeah. I think what's also getting lost in this is if we fire Dan Quinn, Dirk Koetter is just going to probably take over and be the interim head coach for the rest of the season if they don't fire him too. What I would like to see, and I know it doesn't make any sense because it's a defense that's sucked a lot too, is give the, you know, Dan Quinn's go, okay, well, I'll let somebody else try the defense, but we have to get rid of Koetter. Like, if he's going to go down with the ship, let him go down with it. I've never been a big fan of letting head coaches go midseason, because I don't think it's ever worked where you've just like miraculously came back and won the Super Bowl because of it. Let them finish out the season. And then if, you know, the Falcons still suck, let him go. If they seem like something happened and they've got better, you know, then you really have the discussion on your hands. But, you know, in the old days, they didn't just fire coaches. It was normal for coaches to go like 10 seasons or more. Now you rarely see it because everybody's, even when the team's doing good, got that finger on the trigger, ready to just press the button. You know, I'd like to see him finish out the season is what I'm trying to say. I'm not a big fan of like the midseason firing, but I would understand it because after this performance, like it's just, you're always going to blame the head coach in a loss, and he does deserve it because he's running the defense. But, you know, I don't know what else there is to say about it. It's just a deflating loss, crushing, but at the same time, me and you talked about it before. We kind of expected it, maybe not to this extent. But, you know, I wish I could say it's only going to get better, but we haven't even started division games. We still have to play the Seahawks and Rams. We have the Cardinals next week. If we get embarrassed by the Cardinals, though, like everyone under Arthur Blank should be fired. Even people cleaning bathrooms, anybody working security, fire everyone.
Yeah, because I think have the Cardinals even won yet? I think they still.
I don't know, but you know, if they're going to get back on track.
They won today.
Kyler Murray. Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, I was going to say, you know, if Kyler Murray wants a coming out party, this would be it, because, I mean, Will Fuller, everybody has been dogging him. And I do a lot of fantasy football, and there was a lot of people saying, oh, drop Will Fuller. Well, they're going to feel foolish now because this dude probably scored like 50 or something fantasy points against us. That's my other advice. If you have a player who's going against the Falcons, like next week, start Kyler Murray, start Christian Kirk, start David Johnson, obviously, but it sucks because like, I think that's what, like a lot of us had that feeling after the Super Bowl where we knew how it could go back to these days. And here we are, you know?
Yeah, here we are. Well said. And with that, folks, we are going to wrap up this week's post-game podcast. As Evan mentioned, we will be here all year talking about these games, come hell or high water, for better or worse. We may need to drink a little bit to get through them, but I'll drink enough for both Evan and I. For both of us, guys, you can find us on Twitter. You can find Evan at Evan Birchfield on the Twitter. Give him a follow. He's got a lot of great fantasy advice for you guys.
Oh, I just want to mention too, I'm bringing back the, maybe you guys remember Gina Thomas used to do it, the Twitter recap. Right. So follow me at Evan Birchfield, and also follow the Falcoholic on Twitter. And that's how I find your tweets. So do that if you'd like to be involved in that, you know, for next week, obviously. So, but thanks, DW.
Yep, absolutely. And as for me, guys, you can find me at FalcoholicDW, and you can find our articles at thefalcoholic.com, part of the SB Nation umbrella of sites. So, as always, for Evan Birchfield, this is David Walker. We thank you guys for tuning in. Stick with us. We've got another 11 games to go. Thanks, guys. We'll talk to you next time.